What's going on, everyone? Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Gamecast. I believe we're on episode 43.
Who knows?
I am one of your co-hosts, Kenny, and with me is Tess.
Also known as Lala Ree's Elimination from RuPaul's Drag Race, Teresa. Yes. Hello, everybody.
And we're got a dope episode for you today. Before we get into the main topics, though, just a couple highlights of the week. Things that are going on and whatnot in the entertainment world. One of the big things happened this week, actually happened today, breaking the fourth wall, we're recording on Thursday, was the new Mortal Kombat trailer coming to HBO Max on April 16th. It was a red band trailer, which means they showed all the good stuff. There was no censoring at all. It was basically, this is what the movie's going to be, essentially. And I enjoyed what I saw for the most part. And, you know, for those who know, like, games about movies are usually bad. I think I can count
movies
on one.
Movies about games.
Yeah, they're based on games. They're bad. Like, I think that I can count, like, five that are actually okay to good. There's none that are great that I can think of. Unless you count something like Wreck-It Ralph, and then that's kind of unfair. You have to count something that's like, you know, like the Resident Evil films or Mortal Kombat or, the previous Mortal Kombats or, you know, any of the dozens that are horrible. You got to count those. And so with that, it's like your hopes are kind of, you know, you want a good movie, but, you know, the track record is all this is bad stuff, like just bad. And so, however, seeing the trailer, I was like, all right, you know what? I like the treatment. I like the way, you know, some of the characters looked. I like the fighting. The fighting looked pretty decent. The special effects, the nods to certain fatalities and stuff like that looked really good. Even the special effects for the most part, except for Kano. His eye laser just looked bananas. But there was a couple of things that I saw that I didn't like, and I'm not sure how I'm going to or how's it going to play out. And one of them happened to be the main character that they announced a little while back, Cole Young, who's played by Louis Tan, who is a new character who's not been in Mortal Kombat before, and he's going to be basically the focal point of the movie. They say that Sub-Zero and Scorpion are going to be, you know, really, really big in the movie. I think the movie opens up with them, but he's the main character. So I don't know if he's tied to them strictly or if he's actually... The way I see it, he's a white character who is being hunted down by Sub-Zero. At least that's what it looks like. It could be that Cole, because the actor is actually mixed. He's British. I think his father is from Thailand, but his mother is from Great Britain, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong. You've seen him in... like Netflix's Iron Fist and Into the Badlands, stuff like that. So to me, it seems like a Brandon Lee type of thing where like he passes as a white cop. So that's what they're going to make him. And that's what it feels like. It feels like, you know, if you see the Resident Evil films, you kind of know what I'm talking about, where we have a character who's never been in the film before or the games before, who's introduced. And that's the point of view. And all the video game characters are kind of like just around, you know, orbiting this character in a weird way. And it's like, you know, you could just have, you know, Liu Kang be the main character like he was before. Like, I know he's Asian, but it's okay. It's all right. So I don't know how that's going to work out. The movie might be amazing with him in it, and it might not be. I just felt like from the beginning, it was like, why do we need, you know, these extra characters? Same thing with Monster Hunter that recently dropped on digital. And granted, the guy who did Resident Evil, or at least directed three of them, I believe, is the main character of that film's husband. So I get it. She's going to be in it. But it's also like, we don't need you. So another thing that I caught, and I'm not sure how I feel, is Malenia. Now, she is a clone of another character, and she's a villain. And
Lena.
Yes, she is, unfortunately, or fortunate, she's being played by... Or, okay, this isn't the unfortunate part, but she's being played by Sissy Stringer, who is from Australia. She's a person of color. And they haven't shown Katana. My beef here is that I was looking through the casting, and there's a woman who doesn't have a. She's cast to be in the film, but she doesn't have a name yet in terms of like who she is. And I think she's Katana. The beef I have is that she is a either white or light-skinned character. And Melina is a dark-skinned character.
Yeah, that's not fair.
Stop me if you. Okay, all right. So I'm not tripping. I'm
Now
just trying to.
I
Okay.
get
So she's supposed to be a clone. She's a copy, but she's, because of the process, she's not, she has Baraka's, I forgot the name of his race, but she has part of their blood, so she has like the fangs and like the really big, like her jaw is split, so like you can see like the all of her teeth basically. And
Yeah.
so she's similar to that in the film, but at the same time she's dark skinned comparatively to what I think Katana will be. And if that's the case, I really hope they either have the same actress play her, like her and Katana, or
That would be fun.
that is not that she's just not dark skinned and the other's light skinned. Because it's even though, because one person I know on my timeline asked me like, maybe her casting had nothing to do with her skin, and do you think she shouldn't get the job because she's dark skinned or whatever? And I'm like, no, that's not what I'm saying. I want her to get the role. Like, if you're right for the role, get the role. However, and what I told him is that optics matter. And
Yeah.
unfortunately, we've kind of been down this road of colorism where, especially when it comes to women, where you have the dark-skinned women who are, or dark-skinned characters who are dark, or are considered
Bad.
evil,
Yeah.
bad, corrupt, whatever the case may be. And then the light-skinned characters are good, and we kind of know where that comes from. I'm not going to go into the history of colorism and especially in the United States, but that's something that's seen in everything from, cartoons, the Proud Family, to freaking movies, TV shows, just a bunch of stuff where it's like, the darker you are, the more ghetto you are, the bad, the worse you are essentially. And so it looks like, from what I've seen, is that if that actress that I saw is Katana, then it there's an optic there that looks bad.
Yeah,
You know what I'm
that's not
saying?
cool.
So I don't know that to be the case though. So I don't want to stir up anybody for no reason. I don't know that to be the case because we haven't seen the film yet. We haven't
Yeah.
seen, and we don't know if Katana's even in the film to begin with. And in my head, well, I was thinking like, it's a surprise when she comes about. That's why they haven't actually said who's cast as her yet. But if she might not even be in the film. So, this is not to get your pitchforks out and lose your mind over. I'm just saying, this is, I'm just saying, like, from, just me looking at the trailer and whatnot, I'm like, other than that, though, I think it looks great. I'm definitely going to subscribe to HBO Max to be able to check that out. Because it looks. Yeah, it looks fun. It looks fun. And I like the original Mortal Kombat. That was one of the decent films. It was basically an 80s action film with special effects. So
Right.
I was a fan.
I mean, we were really only a fan of the song.
Everyone loved the Mortal Kombat song.
Mortal Kombat! Like, I still don't even understand what inspired them to make this song, but they did, and then we all loved it, and then the dancers at my school danced to it. Like, they had like military outfits on or something, and they
Really?
like, yeah, did like the most popular Lancer Dancer dance
Oh,
to that.
wow.
Yeah, so I just remember that. I'll never forget that.
That is interesting. That is
Yeah. I think even in high school then. I think that wasn't even, yeah, I think it was before I got there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't
So
know. Yeah,
that was dope. We also had Nintendo had a new direct yesterday, I believe. I believe it was yesterday. And they talked about some new games that are coming out. We have a new Mario Golf coming out to the Switch. They also announced Splatoon 2, 3, sorry, Splatoon 3 is coming out to the Switch. A bunch of ports and some really old games too that are coming to the Switch that I didn't think I would hear about or yeah. There's a game called, I think it's Ned the Zombie. No, what is it called? crap, I can't remember. It's a zombie game basically that came out on, I think, the PS2. It's getting like a pseudo remake, and it's coming to the Switch. And I was like, why? Like, of all things to, I, okay, whatever. If it's great, I don't think it was like a cult favorite or anything like that. It completely forgotten, like from my brain. Like, I can't remember the name of it now. You know what I'm saying? To be able to tell you what it is. They also announced some new things coming to Animal Crossing, Mario outfits, warp tunnels, and stuff like that. So a bunch of cool stuff they talked about for Nintendo. Nothing that was earth-shattering. They did announce a new character for Smash Brothers, which is another Xenoblade character. So I don't really care. But beyond that, it was just cool to have some Nintendo stuff being shown. Oh, that's right. Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword from the Wii U is coming over as well. And my point for bringing it up is that it's really cool to see games that are kind of like that lift your spirits, sort of speak.
Yeah.
And Nintendo's been really good with that, especially when the pandemic started, because they had released Animal Crossing. And for so many people, that was like a boon, because you could, theoretically, go to a abandoned island and then set it up however you want, build your own community and all this other stuff. And so it was kind of like an outlet. Like, we couldn't go anywhere, but we could play on the Switch and go to visit each other's islands. You know what I mean? And so I think that Nintendo has been doing really well in that sense, and that their games are so full of heart and whatnot, that it's cool to kind of, I mean, the shooting games, the fighting games, they're all great, but being able to, bounce around these charming games with your family is really dope right now. I bought, was it the new Super Mario Brothers, the new Mario Brothers 3D game, and my girls loved it. We had a great time playing, and so I'm very happy about what Nintendo's doing, even though it's basically what they always done for the most part. But it's like, oh, this is good to everybody just kind of, get around. Like, everybody was on Twitter and we were just kind of like talking about how it's nice. Like, I didn't think anybody would be excited for a Mario Golf game, but the idea that you can go play golf with the Mario characters, like, just blew everyone away. Like, we can go play golf? We don't have to be inside? Like, yeah, you have to be inside. Don't go anywhere. But in the game, you can do these things. And so it was really cool. It was really cool and festive, if you will. So if you haven't seen the direct, go check that out. If you haven't seen the Mortal Kombat trailer, check that out. All that stuff is on YouTube. Don't do it now, because we have more show, but after the show, go check it out. There's a lot of cool stuff to check out online. So those are the brief things I wanted to share. Was there anything happening in your neck of the woods this week?
No, nothing super interesting, but I did start watching Lupin, so I'm really like excited to keep watching this.
Oh, which one?
The new one on Netflix.
Oh, is
So
wait. The Castle of Monte, is it that one? Castle of Monte Cristo? No.
no, not Lupin the Third. Not Lupin the Third.
Oh.
Lupin. Okay.
Oh, okay. I heard of this show.
Yes, so because Lupin the Third comes from this, so I was like, let me watch this because it looks cool as hell and it's a black lead, so I'm like, okay, let me watch this. So it's cute so far. I mean, I shouldn't say cute, but I'm entertained. It's just the origins and how he's becoming a thief,
So wait,
and
so it's Lupin is, or this is about Lupin? Like, they're.
this is Lupin in France and everything, but instead of it being Lupin the Third, they're like the anime with what's his face, with him not actually being a good thief, and him
Oh,
doing a
so
bunch of crazy
is this like an
things.
ancestor to him? Like his grandfather or whatever? Like,
No, I think this is just the original story of Lupin.
I
Of Lupin.
see.
Yeah, it's the original story of Lupin the thief, basically, and that's where
Gotcha.
Lupin comes from. That's where that show comes from. But this is the people version, and it's a black guy playing the lead, and so I really enjoy this. Like, I'm like, okay, yeah, this is gonna be good. So,
Well, that's what's
and
up.
it's a French show, so it's all spoken in French, and there's English subtitles. So, and I think it's a mini series, I think. So I'm on the first episode, and so far I'm enjoying it.
Well, that's
It's
what's up.
it's interesting. I'm watching them try to steal the Queen's diamond necklace.
See, you got to get this streaming on. You got to. It helps. Like one of the things with I even though I've watched it several times, watching The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is such a comfort show right now. And it's in a sense where like I can watch something new and it's like, yeah, I can watch something new, but before I go to bed, it's like I'm gonna watch this because it's I know what to expect. There's not gonna be any craziness,
Any
and
surprises?
yeah, there's no it's comforting. It's like comfort food, in a
And
way.
you don't have to pay very close attention to the stuff you've already watched.
That too, and then certain jokes hit different now that you're older. Like there's a lot, but new shows are good too. Getting new shows. To kind of binge and like dive into their world and just kind of escape, current happenings is such a good thing right now.
Yeah, I did start watching This Is Us. Did I say that last week?
I don't know. Well, it might have been off air that we talked about it.
I decided to start watching This Is Us because it like came on after something else had finished that I was watching, and I was like, why don't I just give it a try? And that show will wreck your life. I don't recommend anybody watch it. Don't do it. Just don't. Like, be careful with
Wow.
what you put into your body. And This Is Us is an amazing show, and you don't need any of it.
Oh,
You don't
gosh.
do not watch this unless you enjoy crying. And I don't. So I don't know why I did this to myself, but I was crying all the time. I can't.
Oh, man. So I am definitely not watching that.
No.
Gonna have
No.
to skip that. But I heard things about it. I heard some good things about that show and how it was emotional and whatnot.
It's
So
so good. Like, if you want to watch a man lose his child to drugs, and then when he gets clean, ask the mom if he can see his child, just to see him, like, just like he's not, I'm not trying to take him away, I just want to see him, and the woman tell him no, and then watch this man cry. If you want to do that to yourself, then please, by all means. But if you're not ready for that, I suggest you play a video game. You play Mario.
well, I didn't see This Is Us in terms of having an emotional response, but I did see Judas and the Black Messiah, and
Lovely.
I had an emotional response to that. That recently came to HBO Max, and also awesome film. There's some things that I liked about it, and I'm not gonna go too deep. We might do a podcast just on that. I wanted to watch as many, of the Golden Globe nominees as possible, especially, the black ones. And so this was
It's
one of
Black
them.
History Month.
There you go. And so this was one of the ones that was on my list, and it's really good. The acting is really good. The dialogue and everything. It's based on a true story. And man, what makes it, I guess, the emotional, or it's just heartbreaking, is how the events kind of play out, because it essentially is based on, the Black Panthers. And before I go into what actually, kind of goes down, like I said, I'm not going to go into a whole lot. I do want to say that I liked how they emphasize certain things about the Black Panthers. They,
Yeah.
a lot of times, or at least recently, I'll say recently, I don't say all the time, but like, I want to say since Kaepernick, like since he started kneeling at the
Yeah.
NFL, there's been this thing where like white people, certain white people will talk about, the KKK in relation to the Black Panthers and how they're, supposedly the same.
No.
And I'm like, this is 100% not true. And what was really dope is that they didn't just hold on to the more militant aspects of the Black Panthers in this film. They actually highlighted some of the other key things that they did. For instance, they had free breakfast, and not just for black people. They had free breakfast for anybody who was basically in the neighborhood, anybody who
Yeah.
was poor, anybody who was in basically in need, free
Exactly.
breakfast in Chicago. Not just Chicago, but other places as well. They also had clinic, free clinic to come and get,
Yep.
checked up and whatever. They bought equipment and got, money or whatever to set up shop in places where people could come and basically get, I don't want to say like health care, but kind of but care that they might not get elsewhere.
Exactly, more care than they were getting before.
Right. And also, so the main character, Fred Hammond, Hampton, is he also he teaches. He's the one of the he's the chairman of the Illinois chapter of the Black Panthers, and he does classes in the mornings. He does the free breakfast. He does he not only did he do all these cool things, he got all the gangs in Chicago to join together. He got the white people who are what is the name of the white group? I forget the name of the white group that he got to join them, but essentially he shared how they were being treated like the by the rich and by the police, how it was similar to how the black people were being treated. It might not be exactly the same in a sense like they're not going to stop you and beat you up or you know do stuff like that, but you understand like certain things that happen in your neighborhood that you would really want that you want to change essentially. And so he ended up creating what's called the Rainbow Coalition, where it's like multicultural groups of different people, blacks, Hispanics, or you know Latins, black people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to kind of come together and demand justice, reform, a whole bunch of great stuff. Unfortunately, a member of the Black Panthers who joined late, William O'Neill, was he you know was a criminal. He got caught, I believe, hijacking a car by a federal agent, and he was I don't want to say forced, but he was told that either you would get you know however many years in prison, or you would you can kind of get tabs of keep tabs on the Black Panthers for us. And so he infiltrates the Black Party pant you know movement or whatever. He befriends Fred Hampton, and it all goes left from there. And again, I'm not going to spoil what happens. And this is historic, so they even have a documentary right before William O'Neill, you know, he actually killed himself in real life. You know, obviously, I believe he felt guilty about the role he played in some of the things that happened in the film. I don't want to give it away, but if you read your history books, if you read up on the Black Panther Party, you know, you kind of know the story already. But if you ha if you don't know the story and you're interested in watching the movie, I don't want to say what happens, but a lot of stuff goes down and we get to see it. And so it was cool to see the very positive aspects of the Black Panther Party for that to be so emphasized because in other films that I've seen with them, it's not. It's more so just the perspective of us having guns, protecting our neighborhoods, policing our neighborhoods, the conflicts we have with police, and then the aftermath of those conflicts. Whereas this, there's some of that as well. There's definitely violence, but majority of it is showing how they were able to bring people together in a positive way. Totally opposite from what anything the KKK stands for. So get that out of your heads. If you don't believe me, go check out the film. And like I said, it even has footage from the documentary that William was a part of talking about the things that happened. So like I said, it's a real thing. But also I love the time period. I love the haircuts, the dress. You know, the 60s and 70s is like I dig it, if you will. So really go is an awesome film, and I said it was awesome and heartbreaking at the same time, but not on like, you know, baby daddy crying heartbreaking. It's just you know what's gonna happen and so you're kind of bracing yourself for it, you know? But it's yeah, it's that's what it's part of.
Baby crying was really, really sad, though.
It
Yeah.
was it's yeah, it's definitely I can imagine. I can imagine. So jumping into so one of the main topics of this week outside of just current events was the Xbox accessibility program and how Microsoft has basically in added to it. If you don't, if you didn't know, Microsoft has been kind of working on accessibility and working with people with disability to come up with ways to get them to be able to game. We saw that with their controller. I forgot the name of the controller. They had a special controller that they made 2 years ago, I want to say. And it allows people to kind of conform the controller into what they need. It's called the adaptive controller. And so it has two like big buttons and like the small little D-pad that you would see on a normal controller, but then you can also move things around. You can move it so that it's a little bit more, you know, like if you don't have, let's say, the functionality of all your digits, you can move the controller in such a way or program it in such a way that you can still play. And it also has, I want to say it comes with like pedals and stuff like that. So essentially, you know, you can play like someone who is using a, you know, the more, I don't want to say normal, but you know, the regular controllers. So they've done stuff like that in the past and had other programs and things of that nature. But what they launched last year, early or not last year, early 2019, was the Xbox Accessibility Guidelines, which is basically practices that they can help to make games more accessible. And they would be like, you know, they would talk to different developers and different people and kind of like put together a checklist of things to kind of make sure that their games are, you know, as accessible as possible for everybody who wants to play, whether you're, you know, you're colorblind or, you know, you're hearing impaired, so you have to do a lot of reading, you know, things of that nature. But since then, they received a lot of feedback and in terms of, you know, the gaming and disability community. And so they wanted to make some improvements, and the improvements are, there's a long list of them. You could find it on the Xbox blog page, where they kind of talk about all the different areas that they want to hit. But one of the cool things that I saw, or one thing I wanted to pull out of these improvements, was they're giving developers the option now to send Microsoft their games, whether it be on the Xbox systems or on PC, because you know Microsoft kind of has a monopoly on the you know, Windows whatnot. And so they can send those games in. They have them analyzed and looked over by members of this program. And then they can, if there's any issues that are found in terms of what they're trying to do for accessibility, they can get some notes and some steps on how to change it, how to make it better. And I thought that was really dope. Because that's not something that is a given or an easy thing to do. If you don't suffer from certain disabilities or know someone who suffers from certain disabilities, you might not know. You might think that the things that you're doing is helpful when they actually aren't. And there's a huge, like, there's been debates and talks about how to make games a little bit easier, where, you know, gamers think like easy means like, oh, this is you putting on the baby controls. Where someone who might have a disability might feel like, no, easy is actually my normal because I don't have the dexterity or I don't have, you know, whatever the case may be to be able to play on your level. And so, in the midst of all that confusion, a lot of people have gotten together and been like, you know what? What is it that we could do to kind of improve? Because the developers didn't know. A lot of developers were like, okay, if you can't, you know, tap the X button to open a door, maybe if you just hold the X button. But when you're looking at their game, they have a big green button. But that doesn't help anybody if you're colorblind, you know, and you can't see green. You don't know if you're supposed to be pressing the B button, the Y button. You don't know because you can't you don't know. And so the developer might be like, oh, holding the button is better, not thinking that, oh, I have to think about these things as well. And so having your game kind of ran through a listing, and at least what they're saying is that based on what you're trying to do, if you don't have the means to create the most accessible game ever, they're not gonna, you know, not gonna ding you for it. They are gonna let you know, like, hey, you can add these things, and this will actually benefit these people and whatnot. But even on that end, just getting the feedback for your next game, even, you know. Just understanding, like, oh, you know what? There's actually a market out there for people who, you know, might be, you know, disabled, or people who were abled, but then maybe had it. They were in a car accident, and now they can't play the way they used to play. So, like, none of that kind of comes up. You just think about, you know, I guess what the people think the main demographic is, which isn't white males anymore. Just want to throw that out there, because I think it's hilarious. But yeah, like you think about like the people that you normally sell these games to, and then that's it. And there's a lot of people who would like to play video games. And
There's a lot of people who would like to play video games. Me being one of them. I would love to play first person shooter games, and I can't.
right, you were telling me about that.
I literally can't. And I don't know if it has anything to do with my lack of hand-eye coordination, which is clearly why I'm so clumsy. I've been this way my whole life. And but I don't understand it. And I never really understood it. I just talked to somebody yesterday who had said that they had the same issue. And I don't know if it's just because I'm not really sure what it is. And I'm not sitting here saying, oh, you know, hey, I need to be included. I'm not actually saying that. But I can't play first person shooter games to save my life. I've tried. I have tried since their invention. I have tried since the Nintendo. Okay, since James Bond, since GoldenEye was on the Nintendo 64, I have
Nice.
tried to play these games and I cannot. I am terrible. I beta tested, what's it called? I don't even remember what it's called anymore because I stopped playing it after three times. Like, I can't play these games. I do not understand. I do not understand why if I press up, the gun goes down. If I press down, the gun goes up. I cannot understand it. I cannot understand why I can't focus. Like, I don't get it. And I can't do it.
Well,
The point is, if I was ever included in their stupid little trial,
I
I would tell them, hey, not everybody can play these games. I mean, I want to. Everybody else plays them, but I can't. And I don't know if that's just something, oh, well, you know what? You're just not good at that. So here, you have to play these types of games. Or if there's just something that I'm missing. I don't know.
mean, for one, I think like in what you were describing, you know, it could be that someone inverted the controls and that kind of mess you up. I have that problem when I play airplane games because it's they model it after real airplane, like, you know, pushing the throttle up makes the airplane go down, right? And that's backwards in my head of playing video games. But another thing with, like, you know, like people who suffer from vertigo, people who suffer from all sorts of things, you know, how do you kind of get around that? And like you were saying, the trial thing that they were doing is also a really cool thing because they include gamers with disabilities as part of the project. So they'll actually have them come and play and give feedback. So the people who are, you know, as opposed to someone who studies disabilities, who is, you know, just a, you know, one of the Microsoft staff who, you know, set
You're
everything
right.
up. As opposed to someone like that, you actually have someone who has the disability that you're trying to, you know, work towards allowing to be able to play a video game, actually testing the game and telling you know, giving you their feedback. And so I'm really excited about that. I think that's a really good thing. And, you know, that's something that I thought about too when it came to virtual reality, because people were seeing it as, like, you know, kind of like a you know, Lawnmower Man type thing. Like, this would be a cool thing, or like the Matrix. That, you know, if you're not old enough, or, you know, if you're too young to know what Lawnmower Man is, I'll just say the Matrix, okay? So like the Matrix, where you are, you know, in this virtual reality, and it's like you could do all these cool things, and it's like you're actually there as opposed to playing a video game. But I was coming on the side of like accessibility, where instead of using a controller, you can use like gloves that work like your hands, and so your character moves their hands like you move your hands, and so that cuts out a little bit of, you know, because if you hand someone a controller who hasn't played video games before and they see all these buttons, it's similar to throwing a new kid onto you know, in front of a keyboard and being like, you know, type up something. It's like, oh my God, like it's overwhelming at first. And so, but if you do a virtual reality, it's like, oh, I can use my hands. I can, so I understand the concept of picking something up, even though I can't feel it. I understand that concept a little bit better than hold L, press X to do whatever. And so in that sense, like first person might be a little bit better in that sense as well, because it's like outside of like the depth and things of that nature, but like being able to see in a way that's more realistic, being able to move in a way that's a little bit more realistic might be beneficial. And that could be something that's looked into as well. I know one thing that used to bug me about first person shooters that doesn't anymore is the idea that there's no peripheral. When we walk, like, we can see like in front of us and on the sides, whereas in first person shooters you can only see in front of you. And that's a little, depending on the type of game that you're playing, that can be a little disorienting when you start playing. Jumping into first person shooters for the first time was rough, but I, you know, because I play so much, I got over it. But like sometimes when my like if my dad jumps on, or someone like who, you know, he grew up playing like Pac-Man and stuff, trying to play some of these first person shooters, you're it's there's a like a little off in terms of depth perception. Like, oh, I thought I made that jump, or I thought I, you know. And so it's not even just the idea of being dis you know being disabled, but then also just age, or maybe ease of use for new players. There's a lot of things that can help.
Old. You do
No,
sound
I was talking
real
about my
mature.
dad. I was that
I
was that was my dad. I didn't say any. That was Jamie. See what had happened, right? And then the way the sun was, I because the sun was in my eyes, right? So I couldn't see exactly who I was talking, but I what I was trying to say. So boom, right? This is what had happened. Nah, but no, what I'm saying is like there's many reasons. I'll even just outside. I mean, granted, we're talking about disability right now, but there's many reasons why this can be beneficial to anybody. And because you find out some things that are beneficial to people, or at the very least, new ways of developing games that are better. I remember playing a video game, like my wife would ask, like if it's something she's never seen before, like why does that happen? And I'm like, you know what? I don't know. I don't know why that happens or why you do that. But because we've been playing video games for so long, and the language of the video games are have been the same for so long that you just kind of accept it. Like, yeah, if you do this, you'll do this. If you eat a mushroom, you'll get big. No one asks why, you just do it. But there's some things that, yeah, it's serious, but there's some things that kind of come into play in terms of controls or how we control our character in a game that these type of programs actually kind of weed out. Like, you know what? Why do we control the game or control our character like this? Like one thing I saw a long time ago, I think this was back like PS2 or PS3. No, I think it was PS3, where a lot of games, in order to, I guess, simulate someone struggling, like with picking up an item or, opening a door that's locked or something like that, they would have you mash a button, like press this button and you'll fill up a little blue bar or whatever the case may be, and then you'll the character will burst through the door, or they'll pick up the chest or whatever the case may be. And what people found out was that some people who just, maybe lost some dexterity in their fingers couldn't tap it fast enough, and so they couldn't pass that portion of the game. And up until that point, you just had to like kind of give the controller to someone else. But then games like Uncharted, I think it was Uncharted 2, where there was an option in the menus where you could just hold the button. Didn't have to tap it, just hold the button. And a lot of people were like, they were thankful for that. Like, oh, I don't have to like mash this button for however long. I could just hold it. Dope. And then that became like a part of the language of gaming. And it was all because someone couldn't do it, but it helped everybody because, sometimes it's annoying. Like, why do I gotta tap the button? Just let me hit the button. If it's not me actually opening a door, like virtual reality opening a door, just let me press a button. Like it's not real. Like this is not fooling me. Like if I'm pressing the button and it's my controller's vibrating, I'm like, oh gosh, I'm opening the door. Like no, it's not. It's not. Just let me hold the button. You know what I'm saying? And so, everyone benefited from it. From that, and it's just a small thing. That's just a small thing. So I'm looking forward to the things that they find. I'm looking forward to the new options and menus and things of that nature that's going to come about. I think newer games, especially in-house Xbox games, because that just makes sense, right? It's your companies. I believe that they're going to have some of the first stuff, come out. Same
That'll be
thing,
great.
even with their console, like the being able to talk to the console and it talks back. Or having it be able to, one of the things that you could do is that when you click on something, it'll read it out for you. And so, like, if you can't, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's already things in play, is what I'm trying to get at. So I'm looking forward to it. I think that this is a solid thing that they're doing. And they've been about like just being accessible for a while now. I think one of the reasons I talked about getting the Xbox Series X over the PS5 first was how accessible they made being able to play video games. Like the fact that you have a Game Pass that gives you like hundreds of games to play, that's a pretty big deal. Or like having a console that's, granted, I don't like only digital, but having a console that's cheaper, that's solely digital, and the fact that you can play with people who have the old system versus the new system, you can
Those
keep
popular games, that's really cool.
Yeah, you can get keep all your peripherals from the previous system, which was never a thing before. that's all being accessible. Like in terms, maybe not in terms of disability, but in terms of, in a financial aspect, right?
Yeah.
So, kudos to Microsoft.
Good job, Microsoft. Somebody on their diversity and inclusion board got smart and was like, hey. And that's what happened, and that's what's up. And I appreciate them for that because there's a lot of people who are represented in this field. There are kids out there with autism and Asperger's who play video games and or people with PTSD. There's all kinds of cognitive disorders and physical disorders that people have. And
Yeah.
I'm happy that they're being recognized here and, games will be out here with them in mind.
Yeah. The ball's on you, Sony. Ball's on you. You and
Yes,
Nintendo.
get it together.
Get together. The next thing we want to talk about was something we hinted at last week, and that was One Night in Miami. We gave you guys a week to watch it. And so we're going to talk about it. We're not going to spoil everything, so you don't have to worry about that. But we are going to talk without a ton of restraint because we're a big fan of the film. And so if you don't want to hear it, this is the time for you to go ahead and jump out. If you do want to hear it, we're going to go into talking about One Night in Miami. And since I've been talking for a while now, it seems, I'm gonna pass the mic over to Tess.
Okay, so I watched it today after a really hard day at work. It snowed here and I had to go to work, and work is stupid and I shouldn't have had to go. I was off, but then stupid me picked up the phone and they were like, oh my God, nobody's at work. We so need you to go. We'll even pay for you to get there. And I'm like, dope. I'm wearing sweats. And I went and I took my dog too. So anyway, I had a long day at work. I came back home. I was hungry and I ordered Popeyes, something that I wasn't planning on doing. But I turned on the TV and went to Amazon, and lo and behold, I still have my sister's login information. Oh, I went ahead and I went and clicked on this movie. This movie is awesome. Okay. I love how the opening of the movie, when introducing the four main characters, shows all of them losing something. It
Yeah.
starts off so bad for all of them. So bad. Okay. Just bad. It's just like, dang. Like, dang. Muhammad Ali, Cash, you got punched in the face and you were literally knocked out. I mean, you still won the match, but you were literally gone.
Yeah.
You were knocked out, Sam Cooke bombed at the Copa. Like, that's bad. They just all had bad openings. Everything was bad for them. And it's just kind of like this great thing that where these four guys on their own had a really bad experience, and then they all get together to celebrate. And so I liked that idea. I liked that premise. Muhammad Ali beats Sonny Liston. This is when he's still Cassius Clay, guys.
Yeah.
And they get together and it's like, aren't we gonna party? Muhammad, I mean, and Malcolm X is like, nah, dudes, we're about to sit here and reflect and talk about our lives and how we can be great people for the black struggle. Like, what kind of buzzkill are you? Like, homeboy just won a world championship of boxing and you want to sit down with, not, okay. They said, you got anything to eat? He said, I have ice cream. What flavor? I got vanilla and vanilla. Wow. How boring is your night going to be that you just, your friend just won the world title of boxing, and you guys are literally sitting in a hotel room with no one there. Like, there's no girls, there's nothing there, there's no coke. Like, come on, you're in Miami, there's no cocaine, there's no cocaina, there's no cocaine, you're in Miami,
Such
and they're
a
just
bad
sitting there.
influence, just such a bad influence.
Such a bit, so bad, totally. But they're bored out of their mind, and they're like, wow, all we have is vanilla ice cream. And Malcolm X is so okay with it. And he's just like, I just wanted to talk and, sit down and reflect. And they're just looking at him like, you have got to be the craziest man on the planet. And basically, this movie is, it's just kind of like a fictional account of what could have happened between them. And they have these really, really strong conversations that turn into outbursts, that turn into arguments. But these really strong conversations between these four black men who are powerful, all in their own avenues, and what they are going to do for civil rights for black people. And it all seems to be very fueled by the words that are given to them by Malcolm X, like the things that he's telling them, like, you are strong, you are the best in your field, you are the best football player, you are the best boxer, you are the best singer. Like, all of you are the best at what you do. You are the people who need to be out there on pulpits talking and energizing black people and fighting for our rights. And I think it's just a very like a beautiful like way of putting everything, and also to show that Malcolm X feels this way, and he's also willing to sacrifice what he has. He's sacrificing his own safety. He's sacrificing his like basically what he loves, which is his life.
Right.
And putting all of that on the line for the betterment of Black people in a general sense. And he was willing to be a martyr. And he was so nervous. It's like he just knew, he said he had this sense of foreboding, or foreboding that something was going to happen. He felt like he was being followed. And I just felt like Kingsley Benadire, who played him, was just, I was, he got me. He really just took me there. I loved his highs and his lows, and I was just very, I was very, very, very entertained. There was a time in the movie where just these four guys having conversations where it felt a little slow, but I also feel like that was the intention, that you didn't have anything else to focus on but what they were talking about. You weren't giving bells and whistles on stuff that was going on in other places. It was just the four of them in the room talking. And so if you were gonna watch the movie and you invested yourself into it, you were gonna sit there and listen to what they had to say. So I feel like that was intentional on the director's part. But I just felt all in all, the conversations that they had, the words that they used, their lines were really good.
Yeah, they were solid.
I love when he was when Malcolm X sitting there talking to Jim, and he's saying, oh, you're the best in this. Like, you are a great football player. Cash is the greatest. You guys all have something great. And then Jim's like, you ain't got a job, Negro. He's like, and then Malcolm had to sit there. He's about to be like, you're right. I'm gonna. But for real, like, what are you? You're an orator. The Nation of Islam pays for everything for you. You're an orator. You just talk to people. You lift people up. That's your job. It's not like it was a paycheck. He didn't have a paycheck.
Yeah.
Y'all are all taking paychecks from white people. That's basically what he was saying. And
Yeah.
then they looked like, you don't got no job. You ain't got no room to talk.
They were hilarious together. Jim especially, like he I and I couldn't say whether or not in terms of, like I said last week, if he Eldis Hodge, if he sounded like Jim back then, because I know the Jim like later in the in his life, well, how he sounds. But he made a good impression at the very least of being this character. And he was funny. His one-liners were very well timed and they hit hard. And I found myself laughing a lot while he was talking. And but everyone had a lot to say that were important. But yeah, like you were saying that this it was a it's fictional, but they actually they did meet. They all did meet. I think Jim was the only one that really talked about it openly, but they all did meet one night after Malcolm won. But what was said is up in the air, like no one knows. And so this Kemp Powers actually, wrote the screenplay about it and kind of been like, so what were they? What do you think they would have said? And this is kind of where we got to. And it feels real though, based on what we know of these characters, that it feels real. And granted, they did do it earnestly in a sense that while you can say like this particular character might have a fault that they didn't pick up on or they didn't showcase, it wasn't about that. It was about this particular moment because it changed certain things. This
Yes,
moment
that's sort of.
changed. Yeah, it was historic in where and how things have changed after that. And so they didn't pick up on, like for instance, Jim Brown having being accused of domestic abuse and things of that nature. That wasn't something that they were going to lean on because this was more about this particular conversation. That
Yeah.
said, they did touch on a lot of things in terms of, race, what people do when they have the power and why aren't they doing more when they could do more? And even though Malcolm X was kind of a buzzkill, so his questions, they were really good questions that people should have been asking themselves, to the point of like, it's like, dang, maybe I'm not doing enough. You know what I'm saying? Like, there was some questions he was, especially when he was talking to, his beef going back and forth with Sam Cooke and, him making songs that were kind of like lovey-dovey and all this other stuff and being so excited to, perform for black for white people versus performing for black people. And then Sam kind of coming from the idea of like, hey, I'm employing a lot of people, I'm making sure they have money. And he's like, that's one way we can get, we can be powerful in that sense. And he's like, Malcolm X is like, why can't you make songs about what we're doing and still be successful? Because you play one way to black people and play another way to white people.
That
And
him off.
yeah, and it's there was some room shaking moments where I was like, ooh, and like I kind of sat up because I'm like, ooh, what is he gonna say? Because we might have been and they almost got to scrapping. I was like, we might have been fighting. But yeah, Leslie Odom did an awesome job. Leslie Odom Jr. as Sam Cooke. Eli Jo I think Goree, is that how you say his last name? Was dope as Cassius Clay. And he, like you say, Kingsley was dope as Malcolm X. Even the people who were, on the sidelines or just had like small roles were really good as well. And kind of picking up what people were saying and what they weren't saying and what it meant to kind of put yourself on the line for other people. And how one thing that really stood out for me, for instance, was when Jim went to the guy's house, and I know people have talked about this before, but he went to the guy. He was like, I appreciate you and all this other stuff. I'm a big fan of yours, and I'm proud to say I come from the same place that you come from, and all this other stuff. And then he was like, I need help, or like he needed to go, I think, work on his car or something like that, or he needed to take something out of his house. And Jim was like, oh, I can help you out. And he was like, we don't let niggas in the house. And it's like, dang, like. All that praise, and you still see me as blase, blase, blah. And so, when they get to the point where they talk about Sam Cooke and like how he's kind of like shucking and jiving for white people, and Jim had to kind of check Malcolm and be like, he understands what they see of us as well. It's just that he feels like he has to play this game in order to be more financially independent before he can make certain moves that you want him to make. And so it kind of got to this point where it was like, you know what? I hear what you're saying, and maybe my approach is a little strong. Not everybody can be or in this position. So how about A, B, and C? And they kind of, they kind of finished the night off with like how they're gonna like move. But it was really, really good getting to that point. And it's, I think it's a conversation that people need to hear. I think that it's a positive conversation, and it's going to be explosive. Like when anybody talks about these things, because you're coming from different perspectives. And especially when you have someone who's a little bit more militant or who's a little bit more willing to put certain things on the line, things are going to get explosive. And I think that they showed how we generally talk to each other. I also like the fact that no white person had anything to say when it came to when it came to this particular point of the film. Like we had the white people early on and certain aspects, but when it came to like these conversations, there was no white people around. Like, we don't need your input.
No,
None.
not needed.
Nope.
Not needed.
Not at all.
No, this was a conversation that black men were having, and this is a conversation that was happening with black people around the country, and that needed to be had. More of these conversations needed to be had, and that where we have this, we know it's scripted, like we know it's put together. But if these conversations were being had in this manner, like around the country, we could have been positioned better. Like the way
Theoretically,
that
yeah.
theoretically. If people could come to whatever this understanding was. I mean, obviously the understanding in this was that this conversation was the catalyst for the three of them, for Jim, for Cash, and for Sam in
Right.
their directions, because obviously it's kind of like Malcolm had made his decision on who he was going to be, and he wanted to kind of like not pass the torch, but light the torch that they already had and
Right.
that they would keep running with, because he are in this conversation, he already felt like his life was going to end soon, which is why he was so hell-bent on making sure his autobiography was done and the other things were taken care of.
Right.
But like that conversation needed to be had with black people. No one else's input. No one needed to be in there. We don't need your
Facts.
two cents. I don't need you to sit there and say, "See, I just wish you would talk to me like this." Oh, that's like the worst thing. Oh, when a white person comes to you and you're having a conversation about race, and like, "See, I just like it when somebody talks to me like you do. Like, when if you just talk to me like that, then I think no, screw that. Okay." Black people gonna talk about race, how it affects them, and you gonna listen or you're not.
Facts.
Okay? And that's why this conversation, these dudes, nobody else, every word that was said, I mean, come on, totally different ideas on how you're helping your own people. Sam's idea was helping financially. Very, very smart, very strong ideas. It was brilliant. He had the most economical power out of all of them. He was basically making little millionaires, well, I making little thousandaires
Right.
out of up and coming musicians. When he said that, what he said, "I own the masters to my songs." That's the end of it, right there. I'd be like, "Oh, what you do? Oh, you do? Oh, okay. Let's talk." Okay. Worried about anybody else. He has his own record label. He's not worried about somebody else. Like you have the at this point, that means you have the power. You have your own studio. You have a place where you can literally make music. All of that is in your hands. There's millions of people out here who want to be musicians who don't even own an instrument. He was
Yeah.
talking about something that the fundamentals of basically being a business, being your own businessman, being an entrepreneur. The fact that he could make the music, he could record the music, he had the rights to the music, he could sell the music, and if anybody else sang it, he would take money from them for them singing
Yeah.
it. He basically laid out economics right then and there. Hey, you want to know how to be rich for a day? You want to know how to be rich forever? The best line that he had said was, "I don't want to be making the pie. I don't want a piece of the pie. I want the fucking recipe." That's going on my wall. Okay. So the idea of, leading a horse to, not leading a horse to water, but, teaching a man to fish rather than catching a fish for him for a day, that's what he was all about. And he felt like he could do that by making music. And not just making, good music people like he can make music that white people like, because white people have shit tons of money at that point in time. So he's going to make a lot of money off of doing things that white people like. But Malcolm saw that as shucking and jiving. Malcolm saw that as dance, monkey dance. And he wasn't about that life. Malcolm was extremely hardcore on that. He's like, "I don't do shit for white people." And what's funny is that Tyler Perry said something in Black as Fuck when he was talking to Kenya Barris in the show. So like there's a part in the show that actually seems very realistic, where Kenya Barris is interviewing Tyler Perry. And he's trying to
Yeah.
talk here because of all the bad all the bad black shows and bad black movies and stuff that are out there. There's a
Yeah.
whole episode on this, and he's talking to him, and Tyler Perry said, I don't listen to what a lot of people say because he's like, well, first of all, I don't listen to anything that white people say because he goes, I don't make my stuff for them. He's like, I've never once made any of my stuff. My art is not for white people. He's like, it never has been. My plays, my whatever, his content was never intended for anybody but black people. And so he's like, I'm not really here for for their criticism.
Right.
And that's kind of the exact same thing that Malcolm was always saying. That he's like, I'm here for black people. I'm buying black. I am black. I am feeding black. I'm here for the interests of black people. I'm not here for the interests of anybody else. Why? Because it's my people who are suffering. It's my people who are struggling. I'm looking out for them. Screw everything else right now. And that's kind of like the same idea. So they had two totally different ideas of how to elevate black people. And can you imagine, like, people who are so strong and so highly thought of by their own groups, having, like, if you married them into one person, the hardlining, no bullshit personality of Malcolm X with the charisma and I don't know, songbirdiness of Sam Cooke, that money-making mind. Like this, that those two kind of together would, with that idea and that power, would be amazing
He would have got
for.
like assassinated way sooner though.
Oh, totally.
They wouldn't let
Because
that all happen.
no, that was never gonna happen. They're like, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. He's empowering black people to stick up for themselves, and he's also giving them a way to make money. No.
Yeah, that's
Kill
not. That's not gonna happen. That's
them.
not at all. But yeah, it's and it was cool with them going back and forth, because ultimately you still see that they're on the same side. You know,
Totally.
words were exchanged and there was hard feelings here or there, but it was never like, because even when there's a part that I really like where they're getting ready to fight, and Malcolm has bodyguards, and they kind of burst in. And they're getting ready to kind of rough up Sam, and
Get to the room so fast.
I don't know. They're paid well apparently, but they got up there, and Jim kind of stepped in front of them, but Malcolm was like, "Nah, we good. Like that's not I don't need your help for this." And it was like, even they were on their way down, coming off the roof. And Jim was like, "Man, your bodyguards suck." And he's like, "Yeah, unfortunately, I don't pick him." So like Malcolm X was even, he was in agreeance that no, I don't want you to harm Sam. Like we were getting ready to fist fight, but it's because it's based on principles, not necessarily based on the like I don't like this person, so I don't want you to, so it's there's a sense of brotherhood there. Like if the cops were to show up, it's us versus the cops. You know what I'm saying? And I really like that. It's to show that there was camaraderie even in the midst of the fire that was brewing between these people. And I wish we could be, more of us could be like that more often. Like, we can have words and we can kind of, be passionate about certain things, even to the extent of coming to blows. But at the end of the day, we're still working towards the same goal.
Exactly. I agree. And that's extremely important for people to know and understand. They were friends. They were of different minds, but they wanted the same thing.
Yeah, ultimately.
Ultimately, and that actually explains the Black experience. It
Right.
really does. And that's why you have so many people on, like, it's like, you guys, we really are on the same side. Well, most of us, not people like, Candace Owens, but like most of us are on the side. And it's just about how we get there. It's the same thing as, like, there's a part where he mentions about his music, and he was like, oh, basically you took all your music from the church. And
Oh, yeah.
the truth of the matter is, like, I just watched that show that it's on PBS by Henry Louis Gates narrates it, and it's called The Black Church. It's really good, actually, and it talks about how the Black Church played a role in the civil rights movement, but it also kind of, if you go back, if you like go back into
to slavery and how the Black churches really started, and how the music started, things like that. And then how you watched how the music progressed. And then you go to where the slaves are freed. And then you start with all these churches and these neighborhoods and this, that, and the other, and then how that spread. Like, he talks about churches in Georgia and then how Black people were migrating and moving to California, and how the churches in California, churches like in the Bay Area, basically were so open and multi-denominational, and that allowed the members to be themselves, like allow their members to show off their flamboyancy and their same gender loving people. Whereas the churches that were in the South were extremely strict and were very against that. And so it's this very, very interesting, like, long history of the Black church and politics and the role that it played in politics and the role it played in music, and how it talked about how many people went off to do music, but they were all bred in the church. So right. When you moved into the disco era and you had Sylvester, you had people who brought these powerful voices that they had been brought up in churches with out into secular music. And so honestly, I thought that was it's a great show. I really do think that everybody should watch it. You know, for people who just celebrate Black History Month for 28 days a year, that should be on your box off your home. For other people, Black History is all year. It's literally every day when we look in the mirror. So, right. But I think it's a great thing to watch, and it just talks about history, but it talks about how churches play a role in the Black experience in this country, because of, you know, everyday life and politics. So when he said that to Sam Cooke, like, that kind of stuck out at me, because it's like, hey, you know, he has a point here. And it's like, you take in this music that or whatnot, you know, you're not from art, but you're taking this music, you're bastardizing it, and then you're using it to sell to white people.
That was a low blow. I'm not even gonna lie.
It was. That was harsh.
he was talking though, like, and even, you know, because even Sam kind of comes around. He's like, you know, when he played that one song, and he was like, you know, the guy's talking about our struggle, even though he's not Black.
And yeah, that was Bob Dylan.
And Sam was like, I was upset. And he was like, you know, he was talking to Cassius Clay. And he was like, I was upset. And he's like, why were you upset? Like, you know, you have plenty of songs. And he's like, why didn't you, you know, I want to write that one. Why, something like that. And he's like, why didn't you? And he was so focused on making money that I guess there was like the fear of like him not being accepted in those white spaces where most of the money is. Mm-hmm. And it's the idea that, I guess he realized the idea that, like, as long as it's coded, which is essentially what a lot of our music is anyways, as long as it's coded, it should be fine. And especially since he already has that power, he's already on the white shows, he's already doing those, you know, places now. It's like, why not?
Yeah.
Like, why not? Like, you're already, like you said, you got all the masters. Like, this is the time to do it then.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's what it was. That's literally what Malcolm was telling him the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, even when he was being kind of snide.
It's the way he was doing it was rough.
Like, why are you trying to talk to him? Like, why are you trying to rile him up? I'm trying to get him I'm trying to drive you to the stove. That's kind of like what he was trying to do.
Yeah.
You know, he was trying. He was trying to get him there. And I mean, you know, obviously it all works out for everybody else. For everybody else. That's not funny.
That's messed up.
I'm crying on the inside. I really am. I dressed up as Malcolm X in sixth grade. I had a speech, and James had a three-piece suit. It was really cute. I looked amazing.
That's what's up.
I did. I gave the speech. I didn't actually read the book, though. I never finished it. I mean, I was 11. Like, I was not going to read that whole book.
No, that's a bit much. That's definitely a bit much.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. I think I was Martin Luther King a couple of times, now that I think about it. It's interesting. Interesting the differences, because, and I don't want to mention it, kind of, because my wife is always like, you always talk about Germany, being that I lived over there for a while, but like I remember doing Black History. Like it was interesting because we had to learn when living over there. You had to learn German and American history. Like you just we were on. My dad was in the military, so the teachers and stuff would. It's kind of like only military brats can go to the school type of thing, and so that what they're teaching is. I don't know if it was a deal they worked out, but you had to learn both, and you know, like English and German and stuff like that. And so we would still have Black History Month, even though I was in Germany. And it was interesting because the focus was way more like this was a big deal. Like it was a whole production versus when I came over here and did Black History Month, it was like, oh, just do a book report. I was like, oh, okay. So, depending on what school you were in, unfortunately. But yeah, I think I was Martin Luther King and then George Washington Carver when I came here and a couple other famous people. Like we had to dress up and then do a book report on them. Which is always fun because just learning that we did really, really cool stuff from time to time, all the time, was really great. And especially when you find out like how much is not being told or being shared. It's like, wow, like we really, really are the shit. Like, but yeah, so that is our show for today. Thanks for hanging out with us. Hopefully you enjoyed it. Definitely go check out One Night in Miami on Amazon. I know it's Amazon, but just do it. Just do it. Also check out Judas and the Black Messiah on HBO Max. I'm going to check out Little Things. I think it's The Little Things. Yeah, The Little Things with Denzel Washington. Jared Leto is up for an award. So I definitely want to check that as at that as check that out as well. I can talk. So I'll probably make mention of that next week, along with everything else that we talk about. So yeah, there's a lot of good movies, a lot of good things to stream. I'm starring new anime, which is always fun. And we're getting up to the end of Attack on Titan. So
Finally.
that's great. That's great. WandaVision finally kicked things off. Episode 3, 4, and 5 have been awesome, and they totally redeemed themselves from the first two. I think the first two are actually better because of these episodes. So if you have Disney Plus, go check that out. I really wish all these things were in the same place, but you know what are you gonna do? It's like cable. I mean, there's some of them that I keep all the time, and then others like HBO, I jump on and off, you know, as things come about that I want to watch. So, and that's pretty cool because you kind of get to pick. Whereas cable is like it's they fake a la carte you. Like it's like you can pick, but you really can't because you have to get these the bundle of others channels. Whereas this is like, oh, I want HBO for this, so I can get it for this, and then I can. Not I can like just cancel it and then come back and it actually was also dope with HBO Max that I've noticed is that they save your listings so like if you know like not HBO Netflix if you completely cancel your account all your like queues and stuff are erased so they what they do is they give you a you can pause your account for a certain amount of months start it back up and then pause it again and then it'll keep your information whereas HBO like I've been canceling off and on, and they've been like, "Hey, welcome back. Here's all your stuff." You know, we kept it warm over here in the corner. You know what I'm saying? We didn't touch your room. You know what I'm saying? You know, they had everything nice and neat for me. So, so that's one cool thing about you know, I recommend, you know, binging all the stuff you want to binge, you know, unsubscribing, and then when something else comes out, subscribe again for a month because you get a whole month. You know. So that's we ain't going nowhere right now. So you know you definitely have enough time to check out different shows and whatnot. But yeah, again, thanks for hanging out with us. Thanks for checking out the show. Please subscribe, hit that notification bell so you're up on all the new content. Definitely be around because we're gonna be announcing some cool stuff pretty soon, and you definitely want to be, you know, aware of what's going on. The people who I did get a little bit of feedback about some of the things we were talking about, but no one, other than to say like, you know, this is dope, but this is a good show. No one is actually saying what they want us to talk about, and maybe that's a good thing. Maybe we're just picking dope content or dope like topics to talk about, and you're like, I'm cool with it. You know what I'm saying? But I'm pretty sure there's like one thing that you're like, you know what? I really want you to check out this movie, or I really want you to do. Let us know. Let us know. and we'll talk about it, or at the very least mull it around and see if we want to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I think that's it for housekeeping.
That's pretty much it. I just think for some other shows that people could watch, I was looking on Netflix. So Sylvie's, what's it called, is coming on with Tessa Thompson.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely check that out as well. At least I know I'm going to. I'm going to try to watch that. I never really have time because, you know, at work. Because, you know, I have to go to work on my days off. Type of thing. So pretty much, yeah, that's going to end soon one day when they're like, where's Teresa? And I'm not there anymore because I occupied myself with another job that pays more.
That would be great.
Exactly. It's going to happen. I know it. Anywho, so yeah, please, if you're watching anything, you're streaming anything on any platform right now, you know, because they have to do this, otherwise they'll be racist. They have like a whole sections of, you know, honoring Black history. So just go on there and look, you know, do your part. Do your part for the nation. Watch all of the stuff. Like, be a contributing member of society and watch these shows. Okay. There's a whole section right now on Amazon for Cicely Tyson. Like, seriously, just go watch them. Because I remember this stuff. And now I remember why my mom was in love with her so much. Like, my mom adored Cicely Tyson. And now I remember. We used to watch her movies when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So, like, just please go, do us a favor. Do Black people a favor. And just do the country a favor. You don't have anything else to do. You're all working from home for the most part. I'm the only one who goes to the office. Clearly. So... Anyway, I really do think that's it. But thank you guys so much for listening to us. Thanks for being with us for another week. You guys are awesome. We love you. All of our first responders out there, again, we still love you. If you can get vaccinated, please do contact your local health departments. If you can get back, you know, not everybody can get vaccinated. If you have pre-existing conditions, you can't do that, obviously, or whatnot. You can't get two vaccinations at the same point. So, like, if you're getting vaccinated for something else, you can't get vaccinated for COVID, like, in the same time period. So I understand that. But if you can, go ahead and do that. You know, please wear your masks. Obviously, masks are important. Keep doing that. I, myself, just got some new Halyard N95 masks. They are great. They cover my whole face. They make a great seal. And they have this felt-covered wire at the top. So they're really, really comfortable. And they're duck bill, so there's a lot more breathing space in them. I know I'm doing a commercial for Halyard right now, but I just wanted to say that because with all these crazy variants going around, guys, and a lot of people are concerned and they're all trying to wear double masks, don't wear two surgical masks at the same time. It doesn't work. You need to wear one surgical mask and then a cloth mask over it. So just saying, please, everybody, wear your masks, wash your hands, and your butt.
Yes.
Hind. Don't be a dick. And if you can and they're comfortable, please get a really good fitting mask that has loops that go over your head, not behind your ears, because that's the best way to stop any type of like leakage of whatever is coming out of your mouth and nose. Okay, everyone. Let's babble. Have a wonderful night. We love you. Bye-bye. Hey.